fairy tales. How about that? Why do we tell our children fairy tales? This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with a thought for today. Fairy tales. Why do we tell our children fairy tales? Oh, for one very good reason. For one very special reason. Throughout all of eternity, it has been recognized, it has been followed, it has been done from the beginning of time through today. It's been done. Fairy tales. We tell our children fairy tales because intuitively we know we want to encourage their creativity, their imagination. We want to encourage their ability to think outside the box. We want to encourage their ability to be something rather remarkable, to think something rather remarkable, to get their mind into high gear on all the possibilities that can be done, that can be had, that can be experienced in life. And the only way to do that is to think imaginatively, to think creatively, to think fairy tales. Now, people who write fairy tales write them spontaneously, and they write them almost from beginning to end in one sitting. They like them so much. Oh, they'll polish them afterwards, just for grammar and so forth. But the idea, the concept, the illuminating realization of a concept, that's the great idea. We tell our children about Jack and the Beanstalk. What a silly story. It's about a boy and his mother living together in very limited circumstance. And their cow gives milk, and they sell the milk in town to have money enough to buy food and other things they need. There's no talk about the rent. They're not paying rent. They must own the property. There's no talk about enough clothing or enough furniture in their house. There's no talk about anything except that this cow, when they milk the cow and they take the milk to town and they sell the milk, they have enough money to pay for the food that they need to eat and to live quite okay. Well, now, one day the cow stopped giving milk. And this is a normal happening in a farmyard animal, but one day this cow stopped giving milk. And so after a period of time, the mother said, we have to do something about this. That cow and its milk is our source of money for us to eat. And so the mother said, okay, Jack, you go in town and sell the cow and see how much money you can get for the cow and what have you. So the story has it that Jack is a young man, maybe 13, 15 years old, and he's okay, but he takes the cow into town. And on the way into town, he meets someone who says, oh, that's a nice cow you have there. And the boy says, yes, I'm taking him to town to sell him. We need to have some money to buy food and so forth. And the man says, well, I have some magic beans here. These magic beans, will you plant them and overnight they'll grow right up to the sky. And Jack thought, well, magic, wow, hey, I like magic, yes, indeed. And so Jack traded his cow for the magic beans, 7 magic beans. Well, Jack went home, and his mother asked, what did you do with the cow? I see you sold it. Yes, Mom, and I got these 7 magic beans. 7 magic beans? Jack, have you been taken for a ride? There are no such things as magic beans. There is no such thing like that. Well, you see, now his mother didn't realize that she was right in the middle of a fairy tale herself. And she should have told Jack, yes, let's see what comes of these magic beans. Well, she didn't. She said, Jack, you go to bed without any supper and throw the beans out the window. So Jack went to bed without any supper, threw the beans out the window, and in the morning, he couldn't see out his window. There was some sort of a plant in front of his window he couldn't see. So he stepped out of his window, and there was a beautiful beanstalk going right up to the sky. And Jack thought, "Oh, wow, I'm going to climb this beanstalk." So, without telling his mother anything, he just climbed that beanstalk. He didn't even have any breakfast. He climbed that beanstalk. When he got to the top of the beanstalk, there was a layer of cloud or something, but it was another land. It was the land of the giant. He saw a beautiful road leading up to a house. And so he walked this road going up to the house. And the lady said to him, "Hey, the giant eats little boys. The giant eats people. The giant eats everything." And the little boy says, "I don't care. I'll hide." And so he hid. And the giant came in and said, "Fee, fi, fo, fum, I smell the blood of an Englishman." What a silly thing to say. You can tell this was over in England, that this had been started as a fairy tale. Well, so the wife said, "Oh, no, 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 it must be the boy you had for dinner last night." And the giant was always eating little boys. And so the giant ate his meal, and then he said, "Okay, I would like to have my food. You know, I would like to have whatever." And so he called forth his goose that laid the golden eggs. And the chicken that laid the golden eggs was very nice. And so Jack said, "Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy." And when the giant fell asleep, Jack stole his chicken and went down the stalk and showed it to his mom. And his mom said, "Wow, how beautiful." And so they had the golden chicken that laid the golden eggs, the eggs of gold. And they were very well-to-do and very happy. But Jack's sense of adventure, his imagination, his creativity, said, "Go up the beanstalk again, see what else the giant's got." And so he did. And he went through the whole rigmarole again, and the giant fell asleep after he called for his harp. And the magic harp came out and was brought out, and it was a gold harp, and it played beautiful songs. It put the giant to sleep. And Jack said, "Wow, this is cool." So he stole the harp. And on the process of stealing the harp shouted out, "Master, master," because the giant was the harp's master. And the master woke up and he chased Jack down the beanstalk. And Jack got near the bottom of the beanstalk. And he looked up and he saw the giant stepping onto the beanstalk and coming down after him. So he took out his axe and he chopped the beanstalk down. And the giant came tumbling down and was never more. And Jack and his mother lived with all of the abundance they could enjoy, with a beautiful harp playing them beautiful music, and they had everything that they could imagine. Now, what an imaginative story. What a creative story. Yet it's a fairy tale, as many of the other fairy tales are, that create about something for nothing. And they create about doing naughty things, like stealing the giant's things. The giant had a right to his stuff, too, and he wasn't bothering anybody up there on top of the cloud. And Jack went up into his world, and Jack started taking on his world. But you see, all these things were unimportant. The only important thing was Jack and his mother were poor, and they needed money, and however they got it, it was okay. Well, now, that's not too cool a way to look at things from the human point of view. And yet it's a story that is taught to our children from the beginning. All the fairy tales have rather sorry morals about them. They are not really vital and dynamic as far as they could be. Now, it wouldn't be wonderful if some creative soul were to write morally proper with values, fairy tales with values that people could have and live by, and that they could tell their children. They say, "Rock-a-bye, baby, in the treetop. When the bough breaks, the cradle will drop. Down will come baby, cradle and all. Oh, rock-a-bye, baby, in the treetop." Well, in the times of the Great Plague, the baby oftentimes died, and they sang these songs, and they had this sadness in their heart. And somehow it came to us as a fairy tale. It came to us as something to be sung. And why do we keep those things that are so not positive, so not beneficial to our thinking? Well, we do that because we're always looking for something strange, something of a fairy tale, something of an Alice in Wonderland, something that sparkles our eyes. We have Superman today and all the wonderful things he can do. We have Popeye the Sailor Man. We have Tarzan. These are all fairy tales. They're all beautiful fairy tales from one way or another, and they're sad fairy tales from another way, because Tarzan missed his mother and father, and he was raised by the apes, and he was raised as a very fine young man, and he had all sorts of super values, according to the way we think of values today. But how did he learn them? Where did they come from? Did the apes teach them to him? Or were they something that were ingrained into his being? Fairy tales are something very special. We have the opportunity to tell fairy tales. The Big Bang Theory is a fairy tale. It's a fairy tale that you would think that scientists would surely not endorse, but they follow it and they say, yes, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. It's a possibility. It's the probability. It's what we can postulate from all of the things that we have read, from what the atoms do and how Earth is formed and how matter is moved around in the universe. But it's still a fairy tale. And it's still a very, very fairy tale. It has no morals to it, you might say, except it goes contrary to the Christian Bible, goes contrary to the Hebrew Bible, goes contrary to many things that are said. And so science is fighting the creation stories of spiritual sources and those stories. You can be sure those stories were the fairy tales of their time. When the little children who were growing up in Adam's time and Eve's time and in Moses' time and in Noah's time, the stories that their elders told them were stories to keep the children in line, stories to inspire the children, stories to lift them up in many ways. And these became the stories of the Bible. And because they were written down and because they were given from generation to generation, they were said to be divinely provided. And who's to say they are not? And who's to say the scientists are wrong with the Big Bang Theory? Who's to say they're right? Who's to say the fairy tales are out of line? And who's to say that they're properly done? Who's to say? Does it really matter? We want to stimulate our mind to think on the most monumental, the most magnificent possibilities that we can ever dream for ourselves. We want to think about the most grand and glorious experiences that we could ever imagine. And we want our children to think of it. And we want our children to know it. And we think, oh, yes, this cannot be done, that cannot be done. And yet, just as simple a thing as walking on fire has become a commonplace experience for people who chose to put into practice what walking on fire means. Walking on fire means to tell a fairy tale about the red hot coals, to say they're cool wet moss, to say that they're cool, to say that they do not burn my feet. And of course you don't say do not burn my feet, because then you put your feet into there in a burning mode. But you put a cause in motion that you're walking on something different. You're doing something different than what the obvious is. It's a fairy tale. Oh, what a fairy tale. But what a positive fairy tale. And people actually do it. You and I can do it too, if we wish. And we just learn the practice and do it. All fairy tales come out of the mind of somebody. Jesus was walking on water. Peter walked on water with him. Now, that was a fairy tale. That was just a story that was told to tell how wonderful Jesus was and the great things he could do. And raising people from the dead, and he said they only sleep. You see, It's all a matter of projection. It's all a matter of how we think about it. It's all a matter of what labels we put on things. But the more we learn about fairy tales, the more we learn to think the unbelievable, think the impossible, think whatever dream we want to think, and realize that it not only has a possibility of being true, if you and I have the possibility of thinking about it, it is true. Anything we can think about, anything we can conceive, anything we can dream about, is true. It is only up to us to step aside from all of the limitations and doubts that say it can't be done, and then demonstrate it. Men are walking on the moon, an impossibility. Men are going into outer space, an impossibility. Men are going under the sea, truly an impossibility. But it's being done every day. All of these impossibilities are fairy tales. Fairy tales that are coming true in our world, in our life. And the more we realize that it is good to tell our children fairy tales, but all of our fairy tales should be told with the values that we have. It doesn't have to say the values limit the fairy tale. It's that the fairy tale does not violate the values. We do not go up and steal the giant's golden goose, the golden chicken. We don't steal the giant's beautiful harp. We don't steal these things. We go up and we see that they're done. And we do something for the giant. We tell the giant some wonderful story, and the giant says, "Here, take my chicken, take my harp." And he gives it to us in reward for our sharing with him. This is a fairy tale. My goodness, what a fairy tale. What a lovely fairy tale. But it is so true. It is so true. A man on his deathbed, lying there, bereft of all, and at that moment, nobody's around. And a little boy comes up to him and says, "You're a nice man." And the man says, "I wish I were." The little boy says, "Yes, you are. You make me happy when I talk to you. You make me feel good when I'm around you. You are a very nice man." And the man says, "But the world doesn't consider me a nice man." "Well, I look at you with my eyes, and my eyes are pure, and I see you as a pure man." And the man says, "Son, you are wonderful. What is your name?" And the boy gives his name, and then he walks out. And the man calls his attorney and says, "I'm changing my will. I want that little boy to receive everything that I have." And so a few days later, the little boy receives the will as the man passed along, and the will left him many millions of dollars. Now, all because he did not stop and see the man as the appearance might show. But he looked at the man through his loving heart, through his glorious heart. And that truly is a miracle. That truly is a fairy tale. That truly is how life can be. Would it be that we would tell our fairy tales more in keeping with the principles that we hold, the values that we hold in life, and not contrary to the values? Because they don't have to be contrary to the values. They can be totally harmonious with the values. But we cannot say, "I'll never get it, it'll never be mine," because that is putting a cause in motion, pushing it away from us. But when we, as a little boy, looked at the man with no ulterior motive, just looking at him and saying, "I see you, a beautiful being just like I am. You're a nice man." And so it is. Fairy tales are something you and I create every moment of our life. Fairy tales are something we bring forth in our world every moment. What kind of fairy tale do you want in your life? What kind of fairy tale do you want to experience? What kind of fairy tale do you believe in? What kind of fairy tale is important to you? What values do you have? When you have values and you take your dreams and your desires and you use them with your values, you'll find that both your values will uphold your dreams and your dreams will live comfortably and harmoniously in your values. Yes, fairy tales are very wonderful and very important. Historically, they've been around forever. Eternally, you can be sure every new parent will come up with more fairy tales for their children. The dream that they might be president, the dream that they might be rich, the dream that they might live in healthy bodies, the dream that the appearance of some illness that they have is not the truth about them. The fairy tale is that they are whole and perfect. And science comes up with some demonstration of that wholeness and perfection. And it is done. Fairy tales are for us, not only to dream and to wish for, but to experience and to know, indeed, they are real. And they are now and forever ours. And only because we go around saying, I like me, I like me, I like me.